Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Eric Steven, Jacob Birch. We keep on going.
the people have demanded we podcast every two or three days.
Well, debating, you know, like, well, if the Dodgers lose, how long do we take a month off after what a stressful series, what a stressful game.
I just wanted to lay down after the five games against the Giants. That was an intense series. I'd say the entire series was only about 25% as intense as Max Scherzer, but that, on a normal scale, is as intense as normal people can handle. So that was something.
We'll go over Game 5. We'll look at it at a kind of a higher level. We'll look at NLCS, question from Greg, all of that after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I wonder how often a game that's that anticipated actually delivers in intensity and in closeness. It seems like a lot of times it's just the dud, and I was rooting for a Dodgers win dud. Wouldn't that?
Well,
in retrospect, now you're like, oh, I'm so glad it was so close, and I'm sure we'll get to the check swing. Bummer that it ended like that. Yeah. But outside of that, just a very enjoyable game to look back on. But in the moment, I just want 10 runs in the first.
From a selfish standpoint, trying to recap a game, like, same thing. I want something. Oh, well, I'm clearly writing about this today. And then, mm-hmm. What am I writing about? Like, you know, it was just like, clenching your butt the whole time, and it's just insane. There was a lot of stuff, man. Like, the whole series was weird. Like, it was intense, like, in a weird way, though, because we talked about this in the previous two podcasts. The Dodgers were shut out in Game 1 and 3. They sort of pulled away in wins in Games 2 and 4, where they found their offense. And then Game 5 was just completely... had to fight tooth and nail to score anything, scoreless till the sixth, ended up being a 2-1 game. It seemed like everything, every fraction of an inch, every fraction of a run, it seemed to matter. And then, so that's why we were sort of breaking down, the granularity of, like, why did the Dodgers go with an opener? Right? And they technically went with two openers, mm-hmm. Instead of starting Julio Urias, who was on regular rest. But they go Knebel, Gratterall in the first two innings. Knebel gave up a couple rockets. One was a double. One was out and out. Was scoreless. Gratterall broke two bats and got, like, two sort of flare hits. But was still, like, throwing, like, 103, which is just ridiculous. He also pitched a scoreless inning. So then they turned to Julio Urias, who was, you know, he was very good. Like, one run in four innings. Then they pull him after four, and you're like, that they did all that just to get through six. And, like, I would have thought they would have went, like, another inning with Urias. But I also sort of get it. It's the last game of the series, and they shortened the sort of bullpen. And then we talked too about maybe Kenley Jansen would be, like, the multi-inning guy on this one because he's the most rested, mm-hmm. and they went with Trinan in the seventh, so, and they didn't double switch, so you knew, like, he's only pitching one. Jansen comes in. Maybe if his spot doesn't come up in the ninth, they don't have to pinch hit for him because they didn't double switch him either. But also, like, yeah, it was then, you know, Max Scherzer, a starter who you might know, was sort of talked his way into being the guy available in the bullpen. So he gets the ninth, which is just insane in its own way. Was super intense. He struck out two in the inning. So I would say where the Dodgers probably got the advantage is forcing the Giants to like sort of make their moves early. It's not like, it's not as simple as, oh boy, the Dodgers are starting a right-hander. We better put nine left-handers in our lineup. It's not like that. They did put two extra left-handed bats in the lineup, Tommy La Stella and Mike Yastrzemski. They ended up getting pinch hit for relatively odorous, so they're out of the game. It removes an option for later. They brought in right-handers for when Urias was brought in. So in the ninth inning, the Giants had two left-handed bats left. Lamont Wade, who was like their late inning hero, like all year, he struck out against Scherzer. I think that was the second out. And then Steven Duggar was the other left-handed bat. They didn't use him to pinch hit for Wilmer Flores, which, you know, kind of makes sense. Duggar is not like the best hitter anyway. He's more of a defensive guy. So I think it got down to the point where, like, you know, for the most part, the Dodgers got what they wanted, I think, out of all that. Now, Flores struck out for the final out, and it was a bad call. It was a check swing, called a swing by the first base umpire. It looked, you know, relatively clearly that he didn't swing, I thought. Of course, the parallel people like to bring up was Darren Ruff on July 22nd at Dodger Stadium. But, you know, obviously a little bit different stakes. Now, the Giants did win the division by a game, and that's a swing game. So, it's, you know, had the Dodgers won that game, they win the division. It's not that simple, right? And it's not even that simple to have like one single play define a series or a season or a game. It's a super bummer that it was a bad call and the way to end it. But I was just like, wanted to point out, like, even in the Darren Ruff game, if you go back, I believe it was a 3-2 pitch that was called ball four rather than a swing, which he swung. But I believe earlier in the at bat, he also should have walked.
Yeah, the three. I think the 3-0 ball.
Yeah, so like, you know, if you're gonna go granular like that, you got to go the full bore. And that was also the game where Sheldon Noisy didn't stretch at second base. So like, just a weird game all around.
And a lot of Giants fans are pointing out that the Eddings zone generally a big zone, and that the Dodgers were hitting more borderline. Got more of the borderline strikes, but it was still a consistent zone, at least according to ump score sheets.
Yeah.
But that said, and then the Dodgers fans can counter about how bad the zone was for the Dodgers in game one. And like, I think the biggest bummer is that whether it's on the internet or talk shows afterwards, it's all up, like, so much was about the check swing versus this incredible eight innings plus, you know, eight and a half innings plus two outs. Like, can we just, like, let's talk about that. And the fact that it get dwarfed comparatively is a bummer.
And also, like, just to point out, so the pitch in question was on an 0-2 pitch, right? So even if the call goes Flores' way, it's 1-2. This season, after a 1-2 count, Flores hit 210, 270, 419. That's a good amount of power for that count. In his career, his OPS is 588 in those situations. Before game five, Wilmer Flores against Max Scherzer, 0 for 17 with 8 strikeouts and a walk. He's now 0 for 18 with 9 strikeouts. But the point is, like, even if he gets that call, the Dodgers are still probably winning. I believe there was a runner on first because Justin Turner made an error in the inning. But it's still an overwhelmingly just percentage that the Dodgers are going to win that game. So it's not like a direct line between that call. It was a bad call and a super bummer that it ended that way. But like, man, like
Grant Brisby, I think summed it up really well. In general, I haven't read his article yet after the game, but apparently it's very good. But he had a tweet that was something like, look, the Giants are almost certainly going to lose there, but I would like a peek at what happened if the call was called correctly.
Sure. Exactly right.
Because, think of the Kirk Gibson home run. Like, imagine if, you know, there had been a bad call for strike three before he had hit the home run. You're like, he's hurt. This isn't going to be a home run. So that's where a lot of the big stories come from, is he was 0-for-17 against Scherzer. Well, what if it was 1-for-18 after this? And so I totally understand the sort of pathos and the emotions that Giant fans are feeling. I understand why it's an attractive thing to talk about. Again, whether it's online or if you're someone that just needs to talk on a talk show afterwards. And that's why it's such a huge bummer, because it was such a great game and such a great series.
So, and like, I think if you look at it, like, take the sort of broader view of the series, I think the main reason, there are a lot of reasons why, there's always a lot of reasons why teams win and lose, but the main reason, I think, why the Dodgers won was, oh my God, their pitching was just so good. Like, so we, you know, all the machinations in game five, they ended up getting the final seven innings out of Urias, Trinan, Jansen, and Scherzer. And then if you throw in Buehler in that mix, those five pitchers, I think it's not like a secret that those are the Dodgers' five best pitchers. They pitched 33 of the 44 innings in the series, which is like the absolute ideal of what you want. The Dodgers almost had that work in the 2015 NLDS against the Mets, where they had, I think Kershaw, Greinke, and Jansen pitched like a ridiculous percentage of the innings, but they still managed to lose in five. It's tough if you don't have people to back them up, but but to get that amount
and
of
and that's what's so interesting guys, is that, and yeah. I think that was actually a wrinkle that I found interesting from yesterday's game. First, like you, I was curious that they would cut Urias off before his spot came up. Didn't give him another inning. Wouldn't double switch Trinan. Seemingly were ready to go with Jansen for two if his spot hadn't come up in the lineup. Because of how much confidence I have behind the next tier, like Joe Kelly's looked pretty dang good. Yeah. Bickford and Vesey have looked pretty good. Yes, not as good as that the tier above them. But like
even Knebel, I know he gave up a couple rockets, but like he's been like generally very good. Like I was telling Chris Willis, who runs the Talking Chop site, the Braves site for SB Nation. I thought 2017 was like the best playoff bullpen the Dodgers ever had, especially when they like threw Kenta Maeda in there for the postseason. Like that was as well set up of a bullpen as they've ever had, or like in this run. Like this year, it might be there, right? Like it might be at least close to that, if not better. Obviously, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, you it's weird. It's just like weird feeling confident in a bullpen, like in the playoffs, just because that's what you always worry about. But I think they've been doing really well. So just in total, the pitching staff, starters, bullpen, everyone, they only allowed 10 runs in five games. The Giants as a team hit 182, 211, 302, a 211 on base, 49 strikeouts, 6 walks. So it was like dominance by the Dodgers pitching as a whole. That's basically why they won. Another reason why they won is because Cody Bellinger, got his hits at exactly the right time, especially, in ninth inning of game five. Camilo Duvall threw him six straight sliders. Wait, is that right? I forgot the exact number. He threw him a bunch of sliders. Whereas, you know, Bellinger's had trouble catching up with heat, especially in the zone. But I think also Duvall was having trouble controlling it. Duvall looked really good in the game three win. He got the last six outs. But with two guys on in the ninth in a 1-1 game, Bellinger hit the go-ahead single. He has three go-ahead RBI in the postseason in the ninth inning or later. I did not remember this one, but in 2017 World Series Game 4, he had an RBI double in the ninth to break a 1-1 tie. I remember that game being close. I guess I didn't remember that it was Bellinger who was the one who got
easy to forget game four, given what happened in game
five. Right, exactly. It's one of those where you're like, okay, I get it. But then, yeah, like that. There's a lot of stuff that like falls under. It's like the Puig home run in game four of the 2018 World Series. Like that should have been like an iconic moment forever. And it's like, nope, they just lost the next day, so no big deal. But yeah, 2018 NLCS game four, he had a walk-off single in the 13th against the Brewers. And then last night, but then that also doesn't even include, oh yeah, he hit a pennant-winning home run. It was only in the seventh inning last year of game seven. So the guy just keeps coming up big. One of my favorite stats here was, you know, Bellinger's regular season was awful. He knows it. Everyone knows it. But against the Giants specifically, he was 2-for-48 during the season. Like that's hard to do. There was a thing, anyways, he was 4-for-15 in the NLDS. So like, and he had a good wild card game too. So he's been like productive, like, you know, that's all kind of all you can ask at this point. Cause the worry was you basically have like a zero in the lineup, when he's playing. Mm-hmm. Obviously his, you know, defense and center is a big deal. He's played a lot of first though too, so it's like he has to hit to like, you know, sort of justify that decision, and he has so far. So that's been good. I will say this, speaking of weird stats, this is totally off topic, but did you watch the I forgot what it's called now, the documentary that was the, I think it was a 30 for 30 production on the Mets, that was like a month ago or so, or maybe 2 months ago.
I did not see it.
It was like a four-part documentary on ESPN. It was very well done, but there was one stretch where they played like a clip of Daryl Strawberry struggling mid-season, and like the announcer for the Mets said something like, he's 0-for-whatever at home this month. And I was like, what? And so I looked up his game logs, and I think he was something like, he had an 0-for-45 stretch in home games, and like the fans were just mercilessly on him. It was like almost like over a month. It was crazy. Like I've never seen something like that. He'd have some hits on the road, then they'd come back home and he's like 0-for-20 on the home team or something. It was just like the weirdest thing. But that was basically Bellinger against San Francisco this year, 2-for-48. The other, perhaps more expected producer in the series was Mookie Betts. Turns out he's pretty good. you know, sort of the forgotten man. He's not a forgotten man. It's just like, it's just funny. Sometimes you forget how deep like the Dodgers are. Cause like Trey Turner and Corey Seager were like carrying the offense for a good portion of September. And then it's like, oh yeah, they also have Mookie Betts, who's like one of the best like all around players we've ever seen. So he had four hits in game five. He stole a base in the sixth off Logan Webb. He scored on a Corey Seager double. Now, another sort of fun stat of the series. Okay, no, not yet. I'll get to it in a second because it's not exactly that play. That was the only run scored off Webb in the entire series, 14 and two-thirds innings. He went seven innings in game five. He was awesome. Like, it was a really sort of a breakout series for him. He had a really good year. He only allowed 9 hits in his 2 starts in the NLDS. Mookie Betts had 5 of them. he was 9-for-20 in the series, Betts was, and he had key plays. I wrote about that this morning. We're recording this on Friday. In just about every game, there were, like, the win probability added. Baseball Reference in their box scores, they sort of put the top 5 plays by win probability added in the box score. And in each of the last 4 games, Betts had a play that was in the top 3, one way or the other. Now, one of those was his line drive that was almost a game-tying single in game 3, but Brandon Crawford made a leaping catch. But the point is, like, he's sort of in the middle of everything, like, for the whole series. And even the one play that didn't make it was that I included in the thing was also in game 2, that throw to get Wilmer Flores at third base from mm-hmm. right field kind of squashed a rally. I mean, it was 6-2 at the time, but the Giants could have had runners at the corners still with 2 outs in a rally. So, yeah, just an all-around great series. Dave Roberts last night, his quote was, "This is when the stars are stars, and he's a superstar." So, yeah, like So yeah, the weird thing about the playoffs, like we talk about the immediacy, either like the Giants today are dealing with like, look, they had like their greatest their most wins ever. Great series, intense series, and then all of a sudden their season's over. With the Dodgers, it's like obviously they prefer to be in this position. Their series, their season isn't over, but oh my God, they have a game tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, how do you like follow that, right? Like now what? How do they follow it? By having a rematch with the Braves. So just who they played in 2020, obviously it's a little different. They're playing in home stadiums this year, not all in the same stadium, and thank God there are off days in this series, yeah, rather than 7 games in 7 days. That was intense. But yeah, Braves have home field advantage because of baseball rules. Wild card team can't have home field until the World Series. So the Braves won 88 games. The Dodgers won 106. Obviously, there's a little bit of a disparity. However, you could argue that the Braves are, I think preseason, I thought they were the favorites in the East, although it was sort of a bunched up division.
Sure.
They had a bunch of injuries and other things like Mike Soroka, the pitching side, obviously Ronald Acuna Jr. Jorge Soler is on both teams have a player on administrative leave for the domestic violence policy. Not Jorge Soler, Marcelo Ozuna. Apologies, geez. Marcelo Ozuna. For the Braves, obviously the Dodgers have Trevor Bauer. It's terrible, but like also, it's just, you know, it's a thing that the team, they've just been away from the team for a while, so it's not what they had planned. But like, the Braves basically had to like remake their whole outfield. They traded for 4 guys. One near and dear to our hearts, obviously, Jock Peterson. He hit 2 home runs in the NLDS, both as a pinch hitter. They weren't starting him for a little bit, but he's been, you know, generally productive. Jorge Soler, is not on the administrative leave. He's been really good. He is actually though was on the COVID injured list in Game 4 of the NLDS, and his sort of availability for the NLCS is like in question now because of that. We'll see, but then they also got Adam Duvall and then Eddie Rosario, and those guys have all, in their own way, have been productive in some way or another. I was looking at this. The Braves, after a play on August 1st, they were down by 5 games. They were in 3rd place in the NL East. Since then, 36-18. That's the 3rd-best record, not just in the National League, but in majors. And the Dodgers and Giants, of course, are ahead of them. The Dodgers in that span, 42-13. It's mm-hmm. like, you see these records, it's just like, good Lord. Like, but the Braves pitching also has been excellent. 3.42 ERA in the last 2 months. That's 3rd in MLB, again, behind the Dodgers and Giants. Dodgers are 2.64. So it seems like everywhere you turn, the Dodgers are still better. But like the Braves are, I think, still a very good team. They have home field advantage. It's going to be maybe a tougher series than people think, but on the pitching side, the Braves only allowed 6 runs in 4 games against the Brewers. The Dodgers only allowed 10 in 5 games against the Giants. So that'll be sort of, I think, how it plays out, how each team does against the other side's pitching. Now Max Fried is locked in for Game 1 for the Braves. Then they have a choice. I guess if they stay, they could stay in order and say Charlie Morton in Game 2 and then Ian Anderson. Now, Charlie Morton started Game 1 for them in the NLDS, and then he went on short rest in Game 4, just like Walker Buehler did. They might want to give him an extra day, which would push Morton to Game 3, and then Anderson in Game 2. But either way, it's going to be those 3 guys in the first 3 games. Now, Max Scherzer,
pitching. Closer extraordinaire. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. One of four, I should have asked you this trivia question. I tweeted it all last night, but one of 4 Dodger starters to get a save in a close out a series in history. Obviously, Julio Urias was one in the World Series last year. Clayton Kershaw in the 2016 NLDS and Bob Welch in the 81 NLCS. So there was a sort of a cost for that. Now, he did not throw his bullpen in between starts. That was essentially his bullpen. Obviously, a much more intense. And if you add in the post-game intensity, way more intense than in any human should ever experience. But so he's still like tentatively in line for game one. He'd be on quote unquote regular rest, but obviously with the appearance in between complicates things. So I think you could see maybe just a shorter leash in game one, which again brings up the always comedic opportunity for Dave Roberts at some point to tell Max Scherzer he's no longer pitching in this game. and so that's great theater in its own right. But sort of the way it sort of works out, I think it almost kind of has to work out for the Dodgers.
Yeah, things get really screwed up. Game one.
Yeah, because then you have Walker Buehler regular rest game two, and then Julio Urias in game three. If you can't have Scherzer in game one, obviously if they don't feel he's ready, they're not going to pitch him. But if you can, it really throws a wrench into things, because then you, like, obviously Tony Gonsolin, who didn't pitch in the NLDS, figures to play a more prominent role, even if it's in a sort of abbreviated appearance / yeah. bullpen game. But I think the Dodgers would prefer that to be in game four rather than game one. So
because it becomes very hard to pitch your three very good starters three times in a seven game series is the main reason.
Yeah.
Someone has to go in short rest things get weird. So I think you're right. I think Scherzer, even if it's on a shorter leash, is has to be plan A, B, and C.
even if he's like a four inning guy, right?
Yeah.
Like even if it's something like that, but I don't think it'll necessarily come to that, but that as of like Thursday night, we're recording this Friday morning or Friday afternoon. Max Scherzer was is still the plan to start on Saturday. We'll see how it goes. Now, with the Dodgers-Braves matchup, I had a similar question for you heading into Dodgers-Giants. I will do the same for Dodgers-Braves. Jock Peterson, he's 22nd all-time in Major League history with 68 postseason games played. He's second in Dodgers history with 64 of those 68 coming with L.A., he has the most postseason games played by someone who's played in the playoffs for both the Dodgers and Braves in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Who's number two?
I will ponder that and answer it after this.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For nearly four decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Who has the most playoff appearances by a player who has a playoff appearance for both the Dodgers and Braves? Say that right?
Mm-hmm. You probably said it better than I did.
Yours was more dramatic. I'll take it. I struggled on this one more than I did on the Giants one. I had a nice list for the Giants series, having probably just because I'm more familiar with who played for the Giants than who's played for the Braves. But I have a guess written down, which is Rafael Furcal.
See, always trust your instincts, man. you nailed it. So he played 59 total postseason games. I didn't look how many were with a few of those were with the Cardinals at the very end, but most of those were with the Braves, and then came on with the Dodgers. Second place, who I was surprised that he played this many postseason games, J.D. Drew.
I'll show you. My list is Furcal 1 and J.D. Drew question mark.
Nice. You can put an exclamation point there. Ooh. Because you nailed it. Let's see. Okay. So, yeah, that's what we have. Now, I do, in the spirit of brevity, I only wanted to mention this because it's like sort of relevant given the playoffs. But so we have a short Dodgers rewind for you. Today, I wanted to make the trivia question almost Danny Heap related, but then I thought there's no way in hell you're ever going to guess Danny Heap, no matter the question. Even if I said, like, how many Dodgers with the first name Danny and the last initial H can you name? It might have taken a while for you to get to Danny Heap. So in that regard, I will say the Final Four is set. It's Dodgers, Braves, and then Red Sox, Astros in the American League. We'll talk about that later, maybe. But only two players in Major League history have played for those four teams. One is Julio Lugo, back when the Dodgers had, remember when it was, wait, did they have Furcal, Lugo, and Oscar Robles at the same time? I seem to remember those three being in the top three of the batting order and just laughing at certain times. But yeah, anyway, but he's not our Dodger rewind. Danny Heap is. I remember Heap fondly because he was one of the quote, the stuntmen. That was the pet name they used for the bench players on the 1988 Dodgers, and anything 1988 Dodgers related is unassailable in my eyes. So that said, in 2 years with the Dodgers, Danny Heap was pretty bad. 211, 297, 235 slugging. That's hard to do. That's a 52 OPS plus. That year, before I get into his playoff exploits, I was going to look up one other thing for him because I forgot. I think he pitched in a game, and this is riveting, sort of me figuring out live if he did. He did. He pitched in a game in 1988, two innings. He allowed two runs. So yeah, he doesn't qualify for the Russell Martin, Justin Turner immortality of a zero ERA. He has a nine ERA. But yeah, he pitched a game in 1988 with the Dodgers. In the playoffs that year, he was used twice as a pinch hitter in the NLCS against the Mets. One of those times he was burned, so he got pinch hit for immediately. He also walked in his other pinch hit appearance. He was mostly pinch hit in the World Series, but he was 2-for-8 in the series. He had a double as a pinch hitter in Game 3. He started at DH in Game 4. He was 1-for-4 in the game. That was, if you remember, that was Mike Socha was hurt. I believe Mike Marshall didn't start either in that game. I think he was nursing something. And so that was the game where Bob Costas, before the game, said, I forget the exact quote, but I think he said, this is the worst starting lineup in World Series history. And of course, that got to Tommy Lasorda before the game. So he's like trying to fire everyone up in the clubhouse. And I think he had everyone saying, kill Costas, kill Costas. So that was pretty funny. That's what I remember about Danny Heap. But yeah, Danny Heap, Dodgers World Series legend. So that's how I remember him.
Well, a legend around these parts. It's time for
questions from Craig.
Five questions from our friend Craig Manami. You ready?
Yep.
Starting off with trivia, the Dodgers will be playing in their 15th National League Championship Series.
Good Lord.
Here are some questions about the Dodgers in those series. Can Eric name the previous winners of the NLCS Most Valuable Player?
All right. So we got Oral Hershiser, 88.
Yep.
Justin Turner and Chris Taylor, 2017.
Yep.
Cody Bellinger, 2018.
Yep.
Oh man, I don't remember who they did last year. Wait, was it also Cody Bellinger last year?
It was not.
Okay, Mookie Betts.
No, this is interesting. I think you're just blanking on because it was a very obvious winner.
Yeah. It's Corey Seager.
Here you go.
Yeah,
he did like, really?
Sorry. So then there, I believe, I think.
If you need years on when
out. I think the award started in 1977. I seem to remember that. So, and the Dodgers were in the World Series in 77 and 78. So I believe the first one was Dusty Baker.
You're correct.
Now, that means I have to figure out 78. So I don't remember offhand, but a general rule of thumb is when the lights are brightest, Steve Garvey knew where the camera was. So I will say Steve Garvey.
You are correct.
Nice.
So you're missing a year.
Oh, 81.
Yep.
Let's see. So he didn't. Was it Garvey again?
It was not.
Did they go Rick Monday because of the home run?
They did not. I'll let you know it is a pitcher.
All right. Oh, okay. One, two. Shoot. Let's go Bert Hooten.
There you go.
Nice.
Good job, man.
I know because he won like a billion games that season. So, yeah.
Six Dodger pitchers have 20 or more strikeouts in their Dodger NLCS career. Who are these pitchers?
Say Kershaw.
Yep, number one with 53.
77. So Don Sutton was gone by 80, but he pitched in two. Did he pitch more? Did he pitch more than three games? I'll go Don Sutton.
Incorrect.
All right. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I was gonna say like Tommy John, but also I think he was gone after 77, so no. What about Bob Welch?
Nope.
You're a liar. let's go with Oral Hershiser.
20 on the dot, number six. Mm-hmm. So you have four left.
Oh yeah. So Fernando.
Fernando with 28, number three. The three left are all active Major League Baseball players.
Mm-hmm. Kenley?
Number two with 31.
Okay. Let's see. 17, 18, 20. Well, they were also in the 16 NLCS. Let's go Ryu?
Nope.
Maeda?
Nope.
Damn it. What about Rich Hill?
Number 5. 21 All strikeouts. Right.
Am I missing one?
You are missing number four, tied with Fernando with 28 strikeouts.
Okay.
Active Dodger.
Oh, active. Okay. Active Dodger.
Mm-hmm.
Urias.
Nope.
No.
Walker Buehler. Number four of 28.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't get that.
Five Dodgers have collected eight or more extra base hits in their NLCS play. Please name them.
Okay. eight. So I'm going to go. I should have saved this for later, but I'm going to go back to Garvey.
Number one with 10.
Yeah. So, So the thing with Bellinger, I'll go with Justin Turner first.
One of the tied for six with seven.
Oh, come on. Okay. So the thing with Bellinger was.
He only wanted the top five. I apologize. Turner is incorrect.
Yeah. The thing with Bellinger is I believe in that 18 when he won MVP, he only had a small amount of hits, but they were all like sort of big hits. So I don't remember him as an extra base guy, but if you go to people like 16, 17, 18, 20. So let's go back to the well with Corey Seager.
Corey Seager again in the Justin Turner zone, just missed.
What is this crap?
Remember, Corey Seager was not very good in the playoffs until last year.
Yeah, but mostly there's last also year. Like a volume thing going.
Sure.
Too. Scherzer. Let's see. I'm just mad.
On this list, there are two former Dodgers, no longer active baseball players, and two active Dodgers.
Mm-hmm. Let's go with Chris Taylor.
Chris Taylor with eight.
Jock?
No.
All right.
You have two retired baseball players and one active Dodger left.
Oh, okay. I so for some reason I thought I was missing more. What about? No, it wasn't enough. 77, 78. What do we got there? God, that would have been. Well, let's just go Dusty Baker.
With eight.
All right. And then the other active Dodger. I don't like this at all.
You were muttering about him earlier.
I don't remember what I
was Cody Bellinger about with eight.
Ah, all right.
And then so you have one former Dodger.
I'm going to tap out on this one.
Ron Say with nine.
Nice. Okay.
Dave Roberts could tie Tommy Lasorda with his fourth NLCS winning team. Can Eric name the other managers whose team have won four or more National League Championship Series?
Oh, wow. National League. So Bruce Bochy.
4-3 with the Giants, one with the Padres.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Cox.
5, all with the Braves.
Oof. So I don't. I think Whitey Herzog only won 3. Wait, how many is this?
You 4. This manager has 4. Bobby Cox is the only with 5.
Oh, but like I'm old,
you
know, I'm
you only have one left. Other? You only have one left.
I see. Okay. Let me think here. Someone who this is bad. 77. Oh, Sparky Anderson.
There you go. All of the Reds. Nice. For the contest, which Turner, Trey or Justin, gets on base more via hit, walk, or hit by pitch in the NLCS against Atlanta? If you choose the same Turner for the tiebreaker, name the Dodger who hits the team's first home run. You must choose a different player.
I will tell you right now, we're not going to choose the same Turner. I'll let you go first, and I'll even take the other one.
All right. I think return, well, I guess in both cases, it's going to have to be return to form, but I think Trey Turner.
Okay, so I forgot to note on here, Justin Turner did have a key hit by pitch in the ninth inning. I didn't notice here, but he was 1-for-20 in the series with a walk and that hit by pitch. So he only reached 3 times. Trey Turner only reached 3 times. He was 3-for-22. He had 2 doubles. So you're taking Trey.
I am.
And I'm taking Justin. I think we should branch out the tiebreaker and make it its own thing.
Sure, I'm in.
New thing. So, let's see. Who hits the team's first home run? Okay. So you went first on that one. So I will go first here, and I will just I will say Corey Seager gets into the 8 club by with the home run right away. He'll be the first.
I will go. Gavin Lux.
Nice. Yeah, he. We didn't talk about him. He sort of played his way into some playing time. Started the last 2 games in center. AJ Pollock has been sort of. I don't want to say banished to the bench because these things are fluid and they change, but. That's kind of where we're at right now. He played his.
You know, I had a question about that. Do you think the NLCS roster differs at all?
Yeah, I think because of the the three in a row. I think they go to 13 pitchers, I think. And it probably means, like, adding Justin Brule, which, like, they didn't even use Gonsolin or Price in the series. So you could see a scenario where, you know, they don't necessarily have to use that many pitchers. But, like, I just think they like the comfort of having that extra pitcher just in case, especially when they're going to probably have to do, like, a bullpen game or a short Gonsolin start in game four. But that you're losing at that point either Billy McKinney or Steven Souza. So, like, you're not giving up a ton on offense. So, like, I think that's pretty much going to be the only roster change.
Okay. And the Muncy talks all gamesmanship, I would assume.
I was going to say, I forgot to mention that, So, I guess both Dave Roberts yesterday and Andrew Friedman after the game said, like, you know, Muncy is, like, where he's doing at, baseball stuff. But, like, I saw the team, like, picture – where everyone, like, gathered for the team photo and stuff after the series, like, he's still, like, holding his arm like someone who shouldn't move that arm. Like, and plus, like, Andrew Friedman, after, I guess, Bill Plunkett asked him, like, does that baseball stuff include him swinging a bat? And I think Friedman joked with Plunkett. He tweeted that he accused him of being a Braves operative, which I think was funny. But, like, yeah, it's hard to imagine. Like, I think the only way, like, Muncy, I can't imagine him being so healthy now where they add him to the roster just for the hope that they play him later in the series, right? I mean, they could. I mean, but, like, that's a rough ask.
I'm excited for him. Look who's coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what you could do, but everyone's going to, like, raise a stink over this, is, like, you know, you have Steven Souza Jr. on the bench and then be like,
oh no.
This is really bad.
Steven Souza has rickets all of a sudden.
Yeah, that's right. He has consumption and he has to miss. So, like, that I don't think will fly. So they would have to, like, use a roster spot. I can't see that happening just yet.
It would be a bit dramatic to say a cloud was hanging over the Dodgers this year, but I don't think any plane ride will be more of a mixture of relief and happiness as the one the Dodgers are on today heading to Atlanta. What about for you two, especially the last 2 months of matching wins with the Giants? How do you feel about the Dodgers finally surpassing the Giants and perhaps in one sense being the better team in 2021?
It was exhausting, man. Like, just,
it's been a while since really we've, was. Like, I mean, I guess in 2018, we cared about the regular season, but I think the difference there was that, especially in the beginning of the year, you had kind of, like, given up to the fact that the Dodgers might not make the playoffs, versus this year where it's like, they're going to make the playoffs. They're an extremely good team. How are they just not catching up to this this mystery team of the Giants?
I think, from a covering standpoint, like, it was an awesome race, right? Like, that was great. But, yeah, like, it really was exhausting just, like, to go through all that, like, especially that series. But I think it was annoying more than anything the last, like, 2 months where the Dodgers are, like, clearly playing excellent baseball. And, I don't want to say it was the bulk of reaction because it wasn't. But it was loud enough to where it was just incessantly annoying that people were being like, what's wrong with the Dodgers, man? Like, they literally went 42-12 in the last third of the season. Like, that's an upper limit type of a thing, right? Obviously, they had the 43-7 stretch a few years back. They were 42-8. That, just because they did it then doesn't mean it's, like, possible to keep doing that. Like, it's really hard to play as well as they played. And you just have to tip your cap to how the Giants played as well. Like, so it was just, it was more, I think that part was grating on some level. For the team, maybe they were annoyed because they got asked about a lot during especially the last, like, 2-3 weeks of the season. But I think they were generally fine with it. Like, players they're kind of amazing at how they compartmentalize stuff, and they just focus on what they have to do. So I don't think the team necessarily, maybe there's certainly relief. I would say if it was me, I'd be worried about, like, a letdown, going into Atlanta, because, like, man, they like Dave Roberts, I think, said last night, we used everything we had, man, to beat them. But the thing is, they're too good for that, and they that's not their thing, right? Like, it could be a letdown, but more like it's just more. It might just be mental fatigue more than anything, to where maybe they're a little sluggish to start the Atlanta series. But yeah, I'm not that worried about where the team is at from my personal standpoint. Yeah, that was an exhausting series to cover, and it's always jarring whether they had lost or won. It's either like, oh my God, the season's over and you have to immediately move on, or wow, there's a game tomorrow. we're sitting here like sort of exhaling after that long series, and then it's like, well, now time to go into Braves mode. It just doesn't stop.
According to the Den of Geek, the best story.
I'm interrupting these questions from Craig with a statement from Eric. I forgot to bring up earlier my pet stat that I was going to bring up. So I mentioned the Mookie Betts steal, and then he scored on the Seager double. That gave the Dodgers a 1-0 lead. In the bottom of the inning, Darren Ruff hit a home run to tie the game at 1. That was the only time all series, that was the 42nd inning of the series, that the team relinquished a lead. Like, as great as that series was, it was definitely not back and forth. It was back and forth in games, but it was not back and forth within each game. It was like, it was crazy how that sort of happened that way. Like, the team that scored first, they won. That was a wild stat in that series. But anyway, carry on. I apologize.
According to Den of Geek, the best story segment of the traditional Simpsons Halloween episodes, Treehouse of Horrors, is the parody of Nightmare on Elm Street on the 6th Halloween episode. My favorite is the parody of The Shining. Jacob, with the archive available on Disney Plus, perhaps you can recommend a few of your favorite Treehouse of Horror episodes for us now. As many Simpsons fans, I sort of stopped watching around 10, so we'll concentrate there. Craig's favorite is from Treehouse of Horror 5 in season 6, I think. And it's my favorite of the Treehouse of Horrors. You have The Shining, you have Homer going back in time with a toaster, and you have the Cannibalistic School. I forget the titles of the segments off the top of my head. All of which are just wonderful. So Treehouse of Horror 5 in season 6 is my favorite. I'm reading this Den of Geek list, and I forgot that Clown Without Pity, which is features Frogert and a cursed Krusty doll, is in the same episode as Dale Z for Zombies, which shows Homer shooting zombie Ned Flanders.
He's a zombie.
Yeah, I forget what the other one. It's on this list, I think. I forget what the other bit is. But that's got to be very high up there as well. What about you?
The immediate thing I thought of with this, and I'm mad that I didn't think of the he was a zombie, because that is a all time great line. I love it so much. But the first thing I thought of, and I was thankful that I remembered correctly that it was Treehouse of Horror. It was in Treehouse of Horror 10. When Lucy Lawless guest starred, and at the end of the bit, I can't remember if she's holding Bart or Lisa, and she just flies away. And Bart goes, "Xena can't fly." She goes, "I told you I'm not Xena, I'm Lucy Lawless." And that line is just a dumb line, and it makes me laugh every single time, and I love it. Those are always great.
King Homer is the other bit in Treehouse of Horror 3, which is, in my opinion, but whatever.
Yeah.
Last question. As I've mentioned before, beloved Westwood icon Stan's Donuts is no more.
Oh no, I'm going to have donuts for lunch.
But another West LA donut store, Primo's, has taken over the location. One of their best donuts is an apple fritter. That leads to this week's questions. What's your take on the traditional fruit Danish, or a donut cooked with fruit in the dough, as opposed to a filled donut?
Oh. So I am a huge apple fritter fan.
Yeah.
That might be the only cooked in fruit thing. I also love like the fruit danishes too. Like, but those are, you know, I maybe treat those. I put those in a different bucket for me. Like I'm more likely to get an apple fritter as I'm getting donuts. Whereas I probably will get like a fruit danish either at a convenience store or the grocery store. Like, I think more likely. That said, fruit filled, if I do a filled donut, it's usually cream filled. But I'm not opposed. There's a lot of good donuts.
Purple filled donuts are delicious. Maple's delicious.
Which one?
Purple. Purple is the fruit. Going back to Simpsons. Simpsons gag.
I'll send you
the clip. Yeah. No, all of these things I love, but the apple fritter at Blue Star Donuts in Portland is definitely one of the best sweet things I've ever had. And now I was texting with Eric and Craig and mentioned that I am going to start a new tradition this year, which is the last Dodgers game of the year, whether it's eventually losing in the playoffs or a World Series clinching victory. I'm going to go get a hot dog in the name of baseball and a donut in the name of the best thing to eat here in Lawrence at late at night, that's still open, is a donut shop.
But the key here for you is that you do it before the game. So it's
No. This is after. This is a celebratory.
Oh, okay. So I thought you're like committing to this long.
No.
Like, for instance, in my head, obviously you didn't say this at the wild card game, so that was a thing. But in my head, you would have already had three of these situations because they could have been eliminated in game four. They could have been eliminated.
I care about my health. So only one.
That's where my head was at immediately. I was like, wow, that is a
no, the whole idea being is even if they lose, I have something to look forward to or a way to celebrate.
So the Dodgers are 6-0 in their last six elimination games. And that actually covers a remarkably small amount of time because obviously they didn't have a chance to get eliminated in the World Series, but it's the last three games of the NLCS. Then they only had six games in the World Series, so that's 9. You had the wild card game, makes 10, and then the NLDS is 15. So 6 of their last 15 playoff games were games in which they could have been eliminated, and they won all 6. So they're still alive. Like Eddie Vedder once said. So I don't know about you. I'm going to go get some lunch, and I will make my way a little bit out of the way to go get an apple fritter and probably some other donuts. So thanks again, Craig, for contributing to bad food decisions or great food decisions, as it might be. But yeah, looking forward to the NLCS. Hope you all enjoy it. We will be back with you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.